From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Fillmore District.
Bernal Heights.
Oakland, California.
Coming up, we'll explain that loud laughter you may have heard coming from the usually quiet hospital.
There's no research that shows that being serious improves health. There's lots of research that shows laughter and humor reduce stress and improve healing and health.
Making tough times easier with a smile. That's also what comedian Marilyn Pittman does.
Now, my parents' deaths, there's nothing really funny about it. But there is something funny about me out here kind of bouncing around struggling with it and showing the audience this kind of like, I'm out here trying to figure this out.
And after a debilitating accident, he turns to art.
So I have to use my mouth a lot. So my mouth is, at the end of the day, is always covered with paint.
Turning tragedy into opportunity, that's coming up on Cross Currents. What comes to mind when you think of clowns?
I'm Krusty the Clown, and I'm going to kill you.
Whether you like them or not, clowns remind us not to take ourselves too seriously.
I'm Krusty the Clown, and I don't like you.
But clowns serve other purposes as well. In the 1998 film Patch Adams, a doctor in training takes clowning to another level, using it to provide comic relief to the patients in his hospital as part of the treatment.
A doctor's mission should be not just to prevent death, but also to improve the quality of life. That's why you treat a disease, you win, you lose. You treat a person, I guarantee you'll win, no matter what the outcome.
That true story was set in Richmond, Virginia, but right here in the Bay Area, in a quiet hospital wing at California Pacific Medical Center, some unlikely sounds float down the hallway. An accordion, a ukulele, and laughter. Luz Gagiola and Molly Shannon make their daily rounds at Bay Area hospitals. They're part of the Alameda-based Medical Clown Project, bringing their unique type of therapy to ailing hospital patients. KALW's Mwende Hazy went on a tour of the pediatrics wing with the clowns.
My name is Luz Gagiola. I'm a medical clown. We're here at the California campus of CPMC Medical Center.
Hi, my name is Molly Shannon. I'm a medical clown with the Medical Clown Project.
These clowns go wherever they're most needed. Last year, Gagiola and Shannon brought their act to a less traditional venue, a hospital. Right now, they're getting ready for their rounds. Gagiola opts for the classic clown look with a tiny red top hat and a big red nose. Shannon wears a white lab coat with sequins and a vintage nurse's hat.
I feel like the world takes itself a little too seriously, so like all the times when we can infiltrate the normal world and help people to have a little bit of fun in some kind of way, you know, is really important, I think, and sort of magical.
Before they go out on the floor, the clowns tune their instruments and agree on their shtick for the day.
We're doing the angle today of that we're looking for our big break. So everyone is kind of we heard there may be a producer or a director.
The clowns bounce into a busy waiting room where four preteens and their parents are sitting and waiting.
Hello, everybody. How you doing? My name's Big Time. Dr. Big Time, this is Little Something. We're Big Time and Little Something. We're looking for a big break. We heard all you guys are Hollywood producers, right, out here in California?
The main goal of the Medical Clown Project is to lower stress in the entire ecosystem of a hospital. Every single person, from the person who's cleaning the rooms, to the doctors, to the patients, to the family, to the EMTs, even the cab drivers.
Jeff Raz is the artistic director of the Medical Clown Project. He's tagging along with us today on our rounds.
There's no research that shows that being serious improves health. But there's lots of research that shows laughter and humor reduce stress and improve healing and health. So that's the axis we're working on.
The project started 2 years ago and currently has 7 professional clowns. Their clowning is paid through a grant that lets them work in 15 units in 4 different hospitals in the Bay Area. All the clowns have toured with the likes of Cirque du Soleil, Ringling Brothers, and the San Francisco women's troupe, Circus Finelli. To become a hospital clown, they go through training in how to interact with sick patients and their families.
So they just knocked on the door and checked in with a parent and got an okay to come in. Now they'll also, as soon as they're in there, they've already started reading the room. What's the energy in the room? Is there, what's the tension level in the room? What's on the walls in the room? Even the smells, is there a disinfectant smell here? We always get permission.
No one wants to be a hospital patient. Medical staff come in and out of your room and give you unpleasant medications. You can't even choose when or what you'll eat. The clowns say their job is to give a patient an opportunity to control their environment. A no is just as good as a yes to the clowns because they gave the patient control. The curtains are closed and the only sound in the room is the beep of machines. In the bed is a sleepy preschool-aged boy with tubes taped to his arms. He lights up at the sight of the clowns. Shannon and Gahiola sense the need for a softer interaction with the Tatman family.
Jeff, Erica, and Brody. And Brody is the little guy that's here in the hospital. He has leukemia. This is the third time we've seen him now. And it's funny, every time they come, I always have a huge smile on my face, too. It's good even for not just for the patients, but for the parents, because the parents are going through a rough time, too. And laughter is a healing process, too. It helps you heal. You know, in different ways, and makes everything easier when you're laughing.
The California Pacific Medical Center fosters a number of alternative healing programs like Qigong, guided imagery, and musical performances through their Institute of Health and Healing. The clowns are a little different because of their consistent presence in the hospital. And Roz says the results are measurable.
Sometimes our observations, the interactions that work, don't work, can be very helpful to a nurse, to the child life specialist, to the doctor. And as we grow, we're right now exploring ways that we can put our observations into the charts.
We've all heard laughter is the best medicine, but in a hospital, it can also bond health providers and their patients. A recent study from the New York State Nurses Association showed therapeutic play developed trust and soothed anxiety in both the patient and the nurse. The clowns are about to head to the ICU when they run into one of their biggest fans in the hallway.
My name is Rita Pozanova. I'm housekeeper, 14 years I work here. I want they will all the time here, don't go home, because we really need them.
The clowns and Pozanova often do impromptu performances together.
We can sing for you if you want.
That would be lovely.
So, you know, you just have to be ready to pick up every offer that's happening around and integrate it into the play, because it's really about fostering like a playful community atmosphere. So it's really good if you can get the family or the medical staff or the patients involved in just playing with you.
Hospital clowns aren't just for the kids. After lunch, the clowns finish the day in the Alzheimer's units and then the skilled nursing facilities. The Medical Clown Project spends equal time brightening the day of adult patients.
It's just amazing, like, making people happy that are in the hospital. Like, you don't want to say it. You feel kind of cliche a little bit saying it, but it's really true. Like, it's a great feeling to have people that are in the hospital have something come from outside of the hospital that's such a different world.
And so Shannon and Gahiola will go on shimmying and bouncing through the hospital, spreading laughter and a little bit of joy as they go. In San Francisco, I'm Wenda Hasey for Cross Currents.
If you'd like the Medical Clown Project to come over to where you are, go to kalw.org to find out how to get in touch. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Laughter, they say, is the best medicine. But what if the comedy material was based on your own family tragedy?
We're at the funeral home, my brother Alan, my sister Karen, and I, filling out the death certificate. The funeral director, who knew my parents for a long time, asks, and what was your dad's last job? Oh, well, he was the office manager at the county mental health center.
That's San Francisco comedian Marilyn Pittman talking about her father's suicide. Pittman is one of San Francisco's first openly gay comics, rising to fame during the AIDS crisis and known for bringing hilarity through her blunt, tell-it-like-it-is comedy. But in 1997, tragedy struck when her father murdered her mother and then committed suicide. After that, Pittman went through her mother's journals and her father's love letters, seeking answers as to why it happened. She asked questions like, did they really love each other? And could we see this coming? Pittman has turned tragedy into performance in the form of a one-woman show at San Francisco's Marsh Theater. I sat down with Pittman to talk about It's All the Rage.
It's the story of my parents' murder-suicide in 1997, and it's also the story of my survival from that, and how I've survived and how I've coped through the eyes of a comic. I mean, being a comic and having this happen, the last thing I really want to do is bum people out when they come to to a show of mine. I'm usually, you know, pretty good at making them fall off their chair and choke and cough and spit and get kind of endorphin releases from laughing. And that's been my history, is my desire all my life, is to do that. And so this was a very difficult show for me to approach.
Right. So this is heavy material.
It's heavy,
and
but
very personal for you.
But it's really hilarious. That's the other thing, is that I start the show talking about road rage. Then I tell about this pedestrian who beat me up when I had a road rage moment with her.
In 2000, just 3 years after it happened, I honked at a pedestrian in a crosswalk at California and Polk. It was my green light. And she threw her latte all over my windshield, blinding me. I managed to pull the car over, and I got out of the car, and I came storming at her, and she got so freaked out, she started beating me up. And then she dropped her keys. I'm like, oh my God, I got the keys. I get back in my car. Oh, I locked the door. Oh, I've got her keys. I'm going to give them back. I mean, you know, I was raised right, despite what happened.
And then, you know, there are moments of hilarity throughout. The girlfriend I was with at the time, who was channeling Mary and Jesus, when I was needing her at the most important moment of my life, and she was off falling in love with her ex-therapist. So there's lots of funny stories to tell about this, the 13 years of coping with it, and including funny stories about my family. I mean, I think one of the hardest parts of this has been that my family was really funny. It was like all these big personalities. My parents were educated. They were upstanding members of the community in Durango, Colorado. And I grew up in this sort of, you know, in the 50s as a kid and 60s and came of age in the 70s. And, you know, my family was always really funny and fun. And, you know, we loved hanging out together and playing cards and going fishing and all these kinds of things. And so this experience of their deaths has just sort of changed my sense of what my family was. Mm. Why did this happen? How does this happen? What was going on? Of course, my mother had filed for divorce 3 weeks before her death, and she'd moved out. Mm. And my father was addicted to painkillers and quite delusional and psychotic. And there'd been a history of sort of passive-aggressive victimhood for my mother and this sort of aggressive rage kind of personality of my father. So it combusted.
So you took a tragedy like that and you turned it into a show and, you know, you kind of put some humor into it. You're a comedian. What role did humor play in you dealing with this?
Fortunately, I had done a lot of therapy, and part of the show talks about that therapy and understanding various therapeutic language, you know, words that help, techniques that have helped me cope with coming from this very dysfunctional family, because it wasn't like my family was, you know, perfect. They were dysfunctional. And so I came from this, and I did a lot of work on it. And I've always found in my comedy act, when it first, back in the early 90s, I put a lot of humor about the New Age movement and therapy and meditation. I had all this kind of making fun of all this, mm-hmm. because it was sort of what I was going through. And so I knew that there would be stories to tell about that in the show. And I mean, I'm trying to laugh at myself and how crazy I've been sometimes. And so that's a lot of the humor in the show, is how I get off, you know, I drive down I-5 on the anniversary of their deaths, and I think I'm just looking for a warm day in a pool. But really, I'm just kind of nuts and I'm fleeing everything.
And I drive about 100 miles down I-5 through the farmland. And I get tired finally, and I go and I check myself into a Holiday Inn Express. I take a swim, and then I lay by the pool in the sun with my iPod on, crying. I'm like, I can't stay here. So I call my wife. I'm coming back. She's been waiting, hoping to see me again. On the Altamont Pass, I call her and have her talk me through it, because I'm so fatigued. She's the only one with the guts to see me through this, no matter how crazy I've gotten. Because she says, you're worth it. And I am. Oh, that sounds like a L'Oreal commercial.
Marilyn, what are your thoughts on what we just heard?
The humor is just there because I think that's life. Life, if the worst happens, you know, it's gallows humor. You need a way to stay sane, and humor is that way to stay sane. It's nerve-wracking because I think, you know, I predict that there will be a portion of the public that hears this and will be like, oh, another solo show about their dysfunctional family and their tragedy. Oh, please. And I think that because I know that that's probably going to be an attitude because I've had that attitude. I danced around this for 13 years, partly because I was ambivalent about solo performance and all of its sort of, let me get on stage and bleed about my problems. And so I've been very ambivalent. There's still some degree of ambivalence about it for me because, but at the same time, I see that there is an audience that's looking for how other people are living through crisis and opportunity that comes from crisis.
That's San Francisco comedian Marilyn Pittman. It's All the Rage is playing tonight through April 15th at the Marsh in San Francisco. And you can catch Marilyn on the air Thursday nights at 7 as she hosts Out in the Bay right here on KALW. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Life's calamities can be hard to laugh about, but when you survive them, new energy emerges. More than two decades ago, Tim Lin was a college student hanging out with his friends one hot summer day. He dove into a pool and broke his neck, rendering him paralyzed from the shoulders down. Despite his disability and the fact that he's mostly colorblind, Tim became a painter. His large canvases have hung in several galleries around the Bay Area. Reporter Cheryl Bolin brings us the story of Tim Lin.
It's not possible for me to render things perfectly realistically and get fine, fine details. And I end up getting a lot of accidents, which are often the best part of the painting. Drips and smears and smudges.
Tim Lin describes himself as an expressionist painter, one who applies abstract expressionism techniques to figurative painting. His style could be described as bold and loose. The son of Bay Area artists, Tim works from his studio in Berkeley. But to be an artist, he must overcome significant physical obstacles.
All the movement I use for painting doesn't come out of my fingers or my wrists. It comes from my shoulders and my biceps and gravity. If I want to draw a line down, I just touch the canvas and let gravity pull my arm down. So I have limited control.
When Tim was 23 years old, his life changed.
On July 10th, 1988, I was in my senior year at Cal Poly down in San Luis Obispo. I was running around and playing sports and climbing mountains and camping and bicycling and swimming and scuba diving and traveling around the world and making love and being independent. The whole world was sort of open to me, and I didn't know if I was going to get married and have a family or travel or get a job, but I kind of wanted to do everything. I was renting a home with some roommates, and we had a swimming pool in our backyard. It was a hot day in the summer, and dove into the pool, hit the bottom of the pool with my head and broke my neck, and became paralyzed from the shoulders down.
After Tim's accident and rehabilitation, noted painter and family friend Joan Brown encouraged him to make art. He began to paint with her in her studio. After a couple of years, Tim applied to the MFA program at the University of California, Berkeley, where his mentor taught. UC Berkeley was known throughout the country for its disabled students program that provided broad accessibility services. Brown died before Tim started his graduate studies in 1993, but she remains an important influence.
Joan, she was so passionate about art, believes so much in its value and its importance in your personal life and history and culture and spirituality.
At Berkeley, Tim developed the tools that helped him become an artist.
So this is my splint. It's all made out of aluminum. That's the ratchet splint. There's a little catch and release there that closes that guy on my fingers. And there's a little button here I have to catch with my mouth. And then a Velcro strap on the back. So those two straps, and then that comes down around these two, my index finger and my middle finger. So I have to use my mouth a lot. So my mouth is, at the end of the day, is always covered with paint. Cadmium orange, which can't be too healthy for you. Spit out some paint, some dust. Now you can kind of see how that mechanically opens and closes those fingers. My fingers, wrists are all solid, one solid element now. So everything comes from my shoulders, gravity, biceps. Joan started me out in acrylic paints. They're the least toxic just because there's no solvents. Fast drying, easy cleanup. Largest painting I think is 7x9, which is pushing it for my stretch. As far as I can move my arms from top to bottom. And it requires a bunch more help because I have to constantly turn the canvas to paint the bottom or the top or the side. Makes me a little bit more dependent on help. The more dependent I get, the less fun it is. So the larger the painting is, the more disabled I feel sometimes. But that's not always true either, because painting large is really, it's painting life size, or it gives you the ability to paint life size and big brush strokes and lots of paint. And that's a really, really fun thing. I started a series of tigers. And it started out intrigued by stripes and how stripes can define a shape. It came after hundreds of paintings of firemen where their uniforms have stripes and how that simple stripe can create a physical shape. I tried painting them small and large, and they wanted to be large. They wanted to be life-size. They're huge creatures. It felt good to feel their whole form and the stripes and the colors. And it almost felt like cheating because they almost painted themselves. Nature has come up with such a beautiful pattern and color and composition just all by itself. Almost didn't have to add anything. I almost had to leave some stuff out. In fact, most of the paintings are half unfinished, abstracted, because they would have been too perfect.
Whether at rest or in motion, Tim's tigers nearly pulse with life. Muscles bunch and stretch under deep black stripes and brilliant orange fur. Tim's characteristic drips add energy, as though these animals could spring from their canvas in an instant.
I guess I find that with most imagery that I paint, is less is more. It's that strange, magical thing that your imagination does. Why reading a book can be much better than the movie. Why people look better in a bathing suit than they do look naked. The imagery becomes more alive, more real than being totally realistically portrayed. And I find almost in all my paintings, there's some parts of the canvas that need to be free, need to be open and less defined, left to your imagination. I'm not always in the mood to paint. My life is pretty stressful and struggling with depression and my attendance and my physical health. So it's not easy and fun always. Then why do it? I love that painting is a stick with some hair on it, some black paint and a piece of canvas. I love the simplicity. I love the directness. I love the physical humanness, the touching, the feeling, the canvas, the slippery paint. I love translating things through your eyes and your brains and out your arm, out the stick with some hair tied on it. I love that connection.
Reporter Cheryl Bolin brought us that story. You can send us stories of how you've dealt with a life-changing experience on Facebook. We're at KALW News. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Rose Arrieta, Sarah Bernard, Julie Kane, Martina Castro, Audrey Dilling, Fatma Duran, Carolina Hidalgo, Chris Hoff, Jordan Katz, RTM's Konohovs, Casey Miner, Erica Mu, Rena Palta, Lisa Ratner, Stephen Short, and David Waldorf. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Our executive editor is Ben Trefney. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. This is Rumba Shay. This Bay Area band combines many styles from timba and bomba to funk and salsa. Rumba Shay is performing on Sunday at the Sausalito Seahorse. There's a free dance lesson at 3 o'clock, and the music starts at 4. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.